Call the resources meeting to order. It's 1 o'clock in attendance. We have Representatives Crawford, Elkins, Seaton, Co-Chair Samuels and Ramris, Representative Gatto and Olson. And we're going to rearrange the agenda just a little bit, and we're going to start with SJR 5, an act urging the United States Congress to reauthorize the Methane Hydrate Research and Development Act. And in front of us we have Joe Balash, and also in attendance we have Representative Kapsner. So without further ado, Mr. Balash.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Balash, staff to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, chaired by Senator Terrio, who's unable to be here this afternoon. Just briefly, the resolution is fairly simple and straightforward. It does urge Congress to reauthorize and renew the Methane Hydrate Research Act of 2000. It's set to expire this fall. The resolution asks Congress to reauthorize it for a period of 5 years and to also appropriate a sum of $70 million over that five-year period to continue the work that was begun under the original five-year period. And just as a way of mentioning, the potential additional reserves present in the form of gas hydrates on the North Slope and in the offshore area immediately around the North Slope could make a big difference in the way we proceed on the gas pipeline project that's currently under negotiation by the administration. Everything from the sizing of the pipe, the access points into and out of the pipe, financing costs, tariffs, these could all be positively affected and impacted if we can demonstrate additional commercial reserves on the North Slope. We think that the effort by the Congress would be well served if they would make the reauthorization come to pass quickly here in the next few months.
Okay.
With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Gatto.
How much was the initial authorization for?
The original authorization was just south of $50 million. I think it was around $47
million.
Yes.
Was that spent mostly in office work? In reading this thing, it said time to get out in the field. Did we spend that much money moving paper?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, a tremendous amount of the money was spent here in Alaska, but not solely in Alaska. There was advanced computer modeling work, seismic work, examination of the seismic data, and as far as how the money was spent, I don't know.
And lastly, one more.
Yes.
Do we have any evidence of this being successfully done in any other part of the world?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, there is a field in Siberia that it appears gas hydrates may be releasing into free gas form and maintaining pressure that otherwise would have declined, but it's very limited information. But that is consistent with the modeling that has been performed in the lab so far, and what is essentially what is needed to be put into practice and monitored in the field on the North Slope.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was under the impression that we were actually getting some of that where gas hydrates were regenerating into free gas on the North Slope. That's not the case. They haven't been able to ascertain that yet.
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, the presence of hydrates is brought about in part by either temperature or pressure, and we certainly have the temperature working for us on the North Slope. Whether or not any of the hydrate is releasing into free gas form currently in any of the wells or fields, I'm not aware of that. Maybe it has been ascertained under the existing work that's been done, but I haven't read that in any of the literature I've reviewed.
The only other follow-up is if you've got one of those little green slips where I can sign on to this.
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, I don't get to sign that.
Thank you. The research that's been done so far on a lot of this, that you can either reduce the pressure, as Representative Crawford was just talking about, or you have to change the heat, and they're looking at either various chemicals or almost a radiator. Obviously, simplification of the terms there, but using glycol or even replacing it with CO2, and there's plenty of CO2 on the slope they can inject back in as you get more gas, but without the research being done. And the hydrates are only found, the pressure would be like in deep water, you know, the Gulf of Mexico. The senator from Hawaii, the United States senator from Hawaii, was one of the original sponsors of this. They're looking at that. Or in our case, it's very cold temperatures. So it's only found in Alaska above the Brooks Range, I would believe. I'd say above the Arctic Circle, but that would be general. But you're talking about only on the slopes that we've actually got it. So there'd be, for Alaska, you're only talking about a very specific area up on the North Slope. Are there any other questions for Mr. Balash? No? Hearing none. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
Joe. And is there anybody in the audience that wants to testify on SJR5? And online we have Dale Bondurant from Soldotna. Dale, are you on board?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead with your testimony on SJR5.
Okay. I oppose any effort to develop the coal and methane gas, especially in the Homer area. It will not only destroy this area, but will increase the pollution of Cook Inlet and adversely affect fisheries. I own property at Binocular Bluff along the highway that serves the city of Homer. I have attended several meetings in opposition to the development of the shallow gas wells, which are related to the shallow coal seams that cover the area along the coastline of Ketchumack Bay. I'm aware of these shallow coal seams that exist in this area of the bay. As of now, the city of Homer obtains a main supply of good water at a lake high above Homer. Otherwise, the water in the low areas along Ketchumack Bay is not for human consumption. I was born and raised in Lima, Ohio. This area where Ohio discovered oil when people were drilling wells for water and also hit oil and gas. So higher main oil lines stretched into Texas before larger discoveries were made in Texas and Oklahoma. Now the lines carry those oils and gas from south to north. After the Depression, we moved to a farm. There I witnessed the fact that the discoveries of oil had a harmful effect on farmland by the oil wells. I could see that effect on the corn fields. Normally, the corn stalks were 6 to 8 feet tall. However, the oils spilled out, and the corn stalks were less than a foot tall, and that never did produce corn of any value. Cook Inlet itself does not flush itself of its glacier silt. You must reach Ketchumack Bay before you can see the blue of a true ocean. This pumping of coal and methane gas at Homer would destroy the fisheries of Cook Inlet. Also, the pumps needed to suck out the methane gas are noisy, and that people will no longer be able to or much less want to visit the areas of Ketchumack Bay, Tutka Bay, Halibut Cove, or Segovia. The noise of the pump compressors will turn Homer into a ghost town. Even schools will have to move up into the hills above Homer to avoid it. We must oppose harmful development, and add pollution will destroy the fisheries of this beautiful area. I thank you, and that's the end of my testimony.
Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate you taking the time to come out. This We understand your concerns on that. This only deals with the north slope with gas hydrates, so we're not dealing with the coal bed methane at all right now on this, but we sure appreciate you taking the time to come out here.
Okay, thank you very much.
Is there anybody else online who wanted to testify to this? Okay, hearing none, we'd accept the motion.
I motion, Mr. Chairman, I motion we move the CS for Senate Joint Resolution number 5G with individual recommendations. I don't think there is a fiscal note, is there?
Attached zero fiscal notes.
Attached zero fiscal.
Is there any opposition to that? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Balash. Next up, I believe that we've got pesticides, HB 19. Move the gavel over.
Thank you, sir. We closed public testimony on Wednesday of last week, and we're going to open it up to committee discussion on HB 19. Is there a discussion? Representative Seaton?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had requested information from the sponsor about the coordination of this with the Anchorage requirements, and those seem to be compatible, and the requirements are already there for most of Anchorage. So I just wanted to let the committee know that the sponsor had gotten back to us on those and appreciated that.
Thank you. Any other questions about HB 19? Seeing none, I accept the motion.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move committee substitute for House Bill 19, version Y.
Any objection?
Attached fiscal notes and individual recommendation.
Any objections?
Make an objection.
Representative Gatto? Sponsor is Representative Myers.
Just a comment on the Personnel Services new position detail. My comment is that the first person is about $1,000 under $60,000, but the annual benefits are almost $27,000. Just a comment that indicates we're paying about 50% pay increase just to cover benefits. I look down to the second person, which is an 18B, $47,000, and once again, $23,800 in benefits again. And we were considering tier fours, and of course, every time we hire somebody before we do that, then that person is certainly never going to enter the tier four program. And I'm not going to object to the bill, but just wanted to make a comment that there is some concern over to keep impacts us for 20 more years every time that we hire another person before we resolve the first tier crisis. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection.
Thank you. Any other objections? Any other comments? Seeing none, HB 19 passes with individual recommendations and fiscal note. Welcome. Thanks, fellas.
Going fast.
No?
Okay, now we got the big one.
Next up, we've got HB 26 from Representative Moses, an act lending to short-term commercial fishing crew members' licenses and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Adam Berg. I'm staff to Representative Carl Moses. And House Bill 26 is a fairly simple bill. What it does is would allow the purchase of seven-day or short-term commercial fishing crew member licenses. Currently, year-long license is the only license available. Current price is $60 for a resident, $180 for a non-resident, and what we're asking for is a seven-day license for both residents and non-residents that would cost $30. The reason for introducing the bill is to maximize options available to commercial fishermen to earn a living. This bill provides new options in a couple of different ways. First, it would give them an opportunity to charge tourists to come work on a commercial boat and see the Alaska commercial fishing industry up close and hands-on. Currently, you could go out on a boat and observe, but not take part in the fishing operation without a crew license. And secondly, it would help fishermen who need temporary short-term help by allowing relatives, visitors, friends to come up and have a chance to assist in a more affordable way. And with that, I'll take any questions you have.
Any questions?
Have a seat.
Yes, I guess I need to trying to figure out whether it'd be better to talk about this under committee discussion.
We can.
With the sponsor representative will be around, then I'd rather do it.
Any questions, Brad? Yes, I've got them.
There was a substantial amount of information in the packet dealing with the Fisherman's Fund and how this would impact membership in that fund. In other words, it seems that that fund has been grandfathered for since 51? Long time.
Long time.
And this would allow someone to access entry into that fund even with a very short license. We have. I guess I'm looking for your comments on that.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto. Just a little history on the bill. We had this bill last year, and our original version would have excluded short-term license holders from the Fisherman's Fund. Mm-hmm. We took that clause out at the request of the Department of Labor, who wanted those fishermen to be able to access the fund. And actually, we have Paul from Department of Labor here who may be able to get into that a little deeper. I'm not sure of all the legal reasons behind it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Duke.
Well, this goes back to excluding the short-term license holders from the Fisherman's Fund. Wouldn't that have the result of then the vessel owners would end up paying for those injuries that happened on the boat?
They would, and I don't know all the details of the Fisherman's Fund. I know there's some kind of cap as to the amount of damages you can get from the Fisherman's Fund, at least that's what I think, but I'll let Paul go into the details of the Fisherman's Fund, if that's all right.
Okay, maybe we could bring the Department of Labor up here. They can address that issue, but don't go anywhere.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Paul F. Lasanke. I am the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and the Fisherman's Fund is administered through the Department of Labor. The questions that were posed.
Generally speaking, how will it affect it if you take it out? Why would you take it out or leave it in? The goal, as I understand the goal of the bill, is a lot of lodges, particularly out in the Bristol Bay region, they sell a seven-day package. And if you wanted to spend a day or two, not sport fishing around the area, but you wanted to spend a day on a boat or picking a net or setting that aside or whatever, kind of just to experience the lifestyle, so to speak, what would be the pros and cons? Why would we leave it in? Why wouldn't we leave it in?
Mr. Chairman, the obvious reason to leave them in was, I think, the second reason that the sponsor's statement addressed, which is that the short-term commercial license was intended to be able to meet peak demand for hands, if you will, at the peak of a run or something like that. So certainly those folks are just as much a commercial fisherman as anyone else who works for a longer period. The second group, of course, is somewhat unique in that it's, as you say, it's not necessarily intended to address people who would otherwise be getting a commercial fisherman's license. But the fund has never had to address someone who has a commercial fisherman's license, at least in name, and then is not able to make claim against the fund. So our concern was just right along those lines that everyone who has a commercial fisherman's license of whatever duration would be able to pay into the fund and make a claim against the fund.
Okay. Are there any other any questions, Representative Seaton?
Yes. Fisherman's Fund supplies basically the first $2,500 of insurance. Is that correct? Since vessels have $2,500 deductible, that's of course their primary insurance, and then what if they're not insured, in other words, deductible is $2,500, then Fisherman's Fund basically picks up the first $2,500 of medical costs. Is that the approximate of how this works?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, you're correct. It's limited. In most cases, it's limited to $2,500 for people who are not do not otherwise have insurance for medical care, and it is limited to medical care and transportation for the purposes of obtaining medical care.
And follow up, if we sell a $30 license to someone that would be engaged in commercial fishing, 40% of that, or 39%, whatever it is going to be less than $12. Would you, as an administrator, feel that you could accept someone's medical liability for their transportation and for getting hurt on the job, especially people that are new to the job, that are just hopping in without any experience and professionalism, for $12?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that's you've put your finger precisely on the conundrum that we have. On the one hand, the amount of money that the fund would receive from the short-term license, if you look at it as a day of exposure to liability for the fund, is actually more for the short term than a lot of people who get the regular license and fish for a considerably longer period of time. But the liability side is there going to be somebody who doesn't know their way around a boat that's going to be more likely to put in a claim? And that's why our fiscal note is indeterminate for that in that respect.
Couldn't you also say that I could go get a season license and know nothing about commercial fishing right now? People that buy the license now may know nothing or wait, know that we're on a boat or a dock.
Mr. Chairman, that of course, I'm sure it does occur. For the first time, someone begins fishing.
Or the people that bring their children on the boat, starting at 10 or 12 years old, when the peak of the run comes, they get somebody else to pick the net.
I think that's correct, although from what I hear from most of the people that fish for a living, they get their kids involved in an early age, but they keep a close eye on what they do, and they're actually kind of trained up a lot more than the average person like myself that doesn't have a fishing background that could get into plenty of trouble.
Okay. Representative Brammers.
Thank you, sir. It appears that in the sectional it says $30, but the bill says $60. Is that
that's it'd be changed.
I'm sorry?
Adam?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the question there.
Oh, I don't have the CS. Oh, give me just 1 second here. I think that version A.
Take a brief at ease.
Why not? This one says 60. This one says 30.
That's for the annual. That's for the regular annual fee.
Oh, the regular annual fee is 60. I thought it was 180. I thought.
For non-resident.
All
right.
Oh, all right. Pardon. Thank you.
Go back on record. Are there any questions about the Fisherman's Fund or for the Department of Labor?
Yes, if the representative could wait for a while, we're having committee discussion, or
sure.
Maybe I can address them now.
Sure.
We do have, I did request a legal opinion from Ledge Legal, and you've all got a copy of that on short-term commercial fisherman's license, and there were a couple of questions. One, if this did not extend to this short-term license, did we have any liability of losing the dedicated fund provision of the Fisherman's Fund, which existed before statehood? And their answer is, probably no. And then the other section that's addressed in there is that could we distinguish between a short-term license, which is gotten cheaply, and a regular term license, and not be in a provision or in a problem with equal protection. And basically, they go through a full analysis there, but in the end, they come down and say that, you know, as long as there's a difference between those two groups of people, then they don't see a problem of due process there. But it couldn't be like we could have, say, oh, halibut fishermen that are out there every day don't qualify for fishermen's fund, but salmon fishermen that are out there every day under the same kind of license qualify. So this kind of distinction of breaking apart a short-term license that we're providing for a certain reason and the full long-term, they think that that's legally defensible. So I just wanted to end it. And have you been given a copy of that legislative opinion? I think that
Representative seen through the chair, yes. I was given a copy of that late this morning. Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Ledoux.
So I want to just make sure that I understand this. Does the department think that by allowing short-term holders of short-term fishermen's licenses to participate in the fishermen's fund that the state would be losing money on this deal?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, we have a hard time quantifying exactly what the effects would be. That's why our fiscal note, unfortunately, is indeterminate. But that's about as far as we can follow it at this point without any experience to go by.
So it could be possible, and there's no way to tell, it could be possible that the most experienced people that decided not to come up for the whole six-week season come up, and they help their kid out who's now got the boat and permit. So the most experienced people could be buying this permit, as well as a couple of the tourists.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that there's really no way to analyze the questions that are being raised here that I know of.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux?
I'm just trying to make sure I understand this. If under the bill as it presently stands, if a crew member were to buy a $30 short-term license, how much of this license would go towards the fisherman's fund?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, as was mentioned before, 39% of that amount, net of the vendors. I think the vendor gets 10% off the top.
And can I just follow up further? And so if they weren't going to be included under the fisherman's fund, then that where would that 39% go?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, my understanding is that the amount of money that would be generated by that would still go to the fisherman's fund, and that was part of the analysis that was prepared for the committee, anticipated that the money would still go to the fund.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the Department of Law or Labor? Sorry. Representative Gatto.
This would allow a tourist, for instance, to simply observe a commercial fishing operation, and a second tourist to actively engage in the commercial fishing operation, both with the same short-term license, and both would be covered by the Fisherman's Fund then.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, yes, but there is a requirement, we believe, that someone actually be engaged in commercial fishing. So there might be a potential question if someone had the license and was just a bystander. And that's something we haven't pursued beyond that, noting that there might be such a problem.
Follow up?
No, I'm done.
Representative Ledoux.
I want to make sure that I understand something else. The way it stands right now, in order to be on a fishing boat, period, even if you're coming out just to take pictures or, you know, just because you're the guest of the captain, somebody needs a commercial fishing license. Is that correct?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I do not have an answer to that, but that is not what I've heard from some other people.
I don't believe that's true either. Representative Seaton?
Yeah, no, if someone is on board and is totally engaged in viewing the operation, they are not required to have a commercial fisherman license if they participate in any way, and like if you're on a salmon boat and you're just taking fish off the deck and putting them in the hold, if you're helping tie up the boat when it comes back into port, or doing any of the anything that would be responsibility of a crew member, then you have to have a commercial fishing license.
Then to do, and then.
Then just to follow up, then the question about what you do if you were confronted with somebody who wasn't engaged in any activities of the commercial fisherman, the totem tourist, that type of person wouldn't even need that license. Is that correct? I'm just trying to figure this out.
That's correct. They don't need a license now. They wouldn't need a license then. I think back to the point of the bill. And there's absolutely no way to tell who will buy the license. Is you get somebody that's a tourist that's coming here for a week and they want to spend a day on a boat or on a set net site picking fish. Anybody who's ever picked fish on a set net site? Dave's plenty. Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, sir. I have a question for you. I understand Representative Moses's concept of buying the one-day pass to Disneyland for $30 or the all-season pass, you know, for $60. I get that dynamic of it. The question that I have is, how much disclosure is required for a long-term license? What paperwork do you have to sign in regard to the Fisherman's Fund and the risk that's taken if you're going to sign up to be a worker? You know, I'm in the restaurant business. If I put somebody in a kitchen for a day to give them an experience of being in a kitchen, there's certain risks that I take for slip and falls, for, you know, knife cuts, for burns, that sort of thing. And so I understand the leisure aspect, and I also understand this letter we got from somebody about how helpful it would be to have short-term crew permit, but that suggests that these are generally experienced folks. What steps will a boat captain be required to take to disclose the nature of risk, you know, for a day or for 7 days, for people that want to, you know, that are less ambulatory, that have not been around it, that are anxious for the experience? What's the difference between, you know, a $60 license and, you know, the paperwork component and somebody who just wants to do the $30 license? Is it identical?
Representative Rammers, through the chair, my understanding is that Fish and Game is the ones that are looking at what would be required for that license, and I would like if you would to let me defer to them on that. I would certainly be glad to follow up to get you an answer in writing if you would like, I believe from Fish and Game, more so than the Fisherman's Fund.
Okay, and we've got Sarah Gilbertson online. Sarah, did you hear that last question? Are you there, Sarah?
Yes.
And did you hear that last question, what would be required? What do the boat captains have to disclose what do they have to disclose now?
I'm not sure, but I could also try to get the committee something in writing on that.
Okay. Representative Ledoux, and then Crawford, and then Seaton.
This isn't really a follow-up question, but based upon my experience doing maritime law, what a boat captain has to do or not have to do, or doesn't have to do with respect to his contracts, et cetera, with his crew members is entirely a matter of a federal maritime law.
Okay, thank you. Senator Crawford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know it's hard, but have you got any idea how much this might be utilized? Any clues as to how much demand there might be for these licenses?
Might be a better question for the sponsor. Or
through the chair, Representative Crawford, it's unclear how much interest there is in this. We had testimony last year from Roland Ma on the Kenai Peninsula. His son had put out a one-day fishing trip on a website, and he got 1,200 hits in 12 hours on
Whoa.
It. Now, I'm not saying that's, you know, nobody has any idea until we make it happen, but you know, from his indication, there's a lot of interest, and there's also been a lot of interest just in tourism in general, on getting off the Gray Lion bus tour and doing your own thing, going up on the glacier and getting on a sled dog team, or or you know, this extreme skiing, getting dropped off on a mountain and skiing down. It, who knows? We don't know.
I know I'd love to send my boys on it.
And out in Bristol Bay, it would depend also on how busy the boat is, on the tide. You know, do you want to get up at 3 in the morning if that's when the tide is? So a lot of the factors would play into it, I think. Representative Seaton had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, currently the only disclosure you have is just like buying a sport fishing license. When you get a commercial fishing license, you go down and put your name and your age and little identification number, you know, whether you're using your Alaska driver's license number for residence or I can't even remember if you put your Social Security number on, but it's just a license application and you pay the fee and that's all there is. The disclosures that are made are different between a vessel and a non-vessel type fishery, because a vessel fishery, there's a requirement that for employees, before you leave port, you must have in writing a agreement contract with the all the crew members so that you tell them exactly what percentage they're going to get paid and those kind of things. That requirement wouldn't, you know, be in place for someone that doesn't go on a vessel, because it says the vessel leaves port. And so set net operations and some other kinds of operations wouldn't be there. So that might help the committee. One of the things that we need to look at is the question about experienced crew members using this instead of a commercial fishing license. Because there again, we get into the situation where what we're saying is we're going to drop the amount that they're going to contribute to Fisherman's Fund as a real working employee. And now we're going to say that they're covered for full medical costs for less than $12. And that's a, you know, with the experience we've had in PERS and TERS with unfunded liabilities, it's a real concern of mine that we establish this unfunded liability for the Fisherman's Fund for something that we're basically doing for a tourist industry. And it, but there are two different applications that I'd like to talk about when we get under.
The flip side of that is it's only $60 for a resident now, so it's only $24. So either way, it's not a lot of money one way or another. It's can you talk about the discussion on in the previous committee on how you ended up at 7 days? Because I agree with Representative Seaton, the point of the bill is to try to get some of the tourists have a free day, on a week-long or 10-day trip, to go experience something different in Alaska, and not to let somebody who's going to help out on the boat to get off a little bit cheaper. If they're out there to help on the boat, another hand makes the boat more money, simple as that, or you wouldn't have them there. So can you just tell us how the discussions went and why it ended up at 7 days instead of, I remember last year it was 3 days, if I remember correctly.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. It's been all sorts of different lengths of days over the last year. But what we went into the last meeting with was a 1 or a 3 day option. And the committee discussion was basically, and I think Representative Ledoux was one of the persons bringing it up, different fisheries have different day amounts for openings. There's weather problems in certain places, so you could conceivably buy your crew member license one day and not be able to get to the fishery the next. And 7 days covered, we figured, most fisheries. Also, Fish and Game didn't want to leave a bunch of different options out there. They preferred one option for the first year, and 7 days is what the last committee ended out at.
Okay. Are there any other questions for the sponsor right now? I do have some public testimony coming. Don't go anywhere, Adam. Is there anybody else in the audience wants to testify? No? Okay, we'll go online. Gary Fandre from Kenai. You on here, Gary? Gary, are you on here from Kenai? Okay, let me know if he comes back. In the meantime, we'll go on And is there any questions? Sarah Gilbertson is also online to answer questions with Fish and Game. So before we get to Gary to see if he's come on, is there any committee discussion now? We're leaving public testimony open. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, you know, I appreciate why the sponsor brought forth the bill last year, but there's two different things that this bill covers. One is the tourist that's going to come along and pay to go out on a commercial fishing operation, wants to get involved, be able to, you know, land a fish or short fish or just understanding and what the commercial fishing industry is, and the bill, the requirements the Coast Guard has and all will have to be fulfilled and all those things. And, you know, that to me is a good economic driver for the state. The other section of this bill, or the other way this bill can be used, is to take and get inexperienced, non-professional deckhands and not be paying them even enough money so that they can get a commercial fishing license or a non-resident fishing license, and then saying, oh, that we need this cheap license because we want to hire cheap labor and get McDonald's guys down here to do our work. And that has the exact opposite effect of unprofessionalizing and getting cheap labor into the market for fishing. And so I would hope that we would segregate those two. I think the former is a very worthy goal. The other one exposes Fisherman's Fund to liability, as well as I think it does not do well for our fishing labor market and people's expertise and professionalism. And so I would hope that we would segregate those two, and I have an amendment that I would like to offer when you're receptive to that.
Okay.
To do it.
Okay. Is there any other committee discussion?
Yes. Just a point of reference, Representative Seaton, with all due respect, I have a sensitivity to food service workers, and I'd rather the relationship be drawn to an unskilled worker rather than to a McDonald's type worker, because food service workers are respected and highly skilled in their endeavors.
And Mr. Chairman, responding, I totally agree that food service workers are professional and skilled at their skill. But if the purpose of this bill is to take somebody that is not skilled in the profession of commercial fishing and then plunk them down for a very short period of time, and inherent in this bill is the idea that we're not going to pay that person enough for them even to be able to buy a regular license, that's what disturbs me. I have no problem at all having food service workers. I've got some great people that I've employed over the years coming down and learning and participating in the trade. But inherent, if we use the bill this way with the short-term license, is the idea that we're not going to pay those people enough for them to even buy a commercial fishing license. And that's my dispute with that section.
I see the problem slightly differently. It's not that they can't afford to, but you're letting them off the hook. If you only need the help for 7 days, you could have experienced people, and now you're just shorting the state $30 to go out there and help. And I'm used to the Bristol Bay Run. It's 6 weeks long. You know exactly when it starts. You know exactly when it ends. It lasts 4 weeks, and for 2 weeks or maybe 1 week, you need all the help you can get. You're not going to attract more help just because it's $30 cheaper. $30 to $60, whatever, make it $100. You know, it seems cheap to me to begin with anyway, but and that's my problem with the 7 day license. You know, it seemed make more sense to me to have a 3 day license. Nobody's gonna fly anywhere or go to the fishing grounds or do anything. And we're not talking about crabbing on the Bering Sea. I mean, but nobody's gonna go out and do something like that, take the expense to get to the grounds to fish for 2 days. But for seven, they might take a week off of work. And I will have an amendment to say that you can only buy one per year, so you can't keep tagging on. You can't decide, well, the fishing's hot, now I'm going to get another $30 one when I should have just bought the $60 one to begin with. So when the time comes. But I think I'd like to hear what the committee thinks about shortening the time back to, you know, if there's a compromise. The Fisheries Committee went to seven and maybe back to four, and I don't know what the sponsor thinks about You'd be bouncing back and forth. But Representative Ledoux.
I guess I think that it's important that we have a single time that it, I mean, Fish and Game didn't want various options. And I know I heard from the fishing community, I think the original time was one option was 1 day, another option was 3 days. And I heard from various people in the fishing community that they'd like to see that a little bit longer. I mean, I could live with 4 days, 5 days.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that if the amendment that I was going to offer, which is labeled Y2, which basically says that if you're getting paid, if you're an employee, you can't use this license. If you're going to be a commercial fisherman and be an employee getting paid, then this license wouldn't apply to you. And if that's the case, then I don't think we have to worry about people getting more than one, or the time limit isn't nearly as critical. That means that this bill would cover those people that Representative Moses started with, saying we want to be able to have people come up and provide a recreational and a tourist opportunity for these people, some income generating throughout the state. That would still apply. But if you were getting paid to be on the boat, if you were getting compensated, if you were really a crew member, then you should get a real crew member's license. And so I think that in that vein, we wouldn't need to change the, we wouldn't need to limit the time frame.
I'd like to hear the comment on that amendment from the sponsor, and also I'll call on Sarah Gilbertson in a second as soon as the sponsor is through. Adam, what's the ups and downsides of do we have public testimony yet? Did anybody else come online yet? Never came back? Why don't we leave it open, but why don't we just move the amendment?
Okay.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move amendment number one, which is labeled 24LS0181/Y.2.
Y.2 Utermal, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Does everybody have Y.2?
And would you please be sure you have Y2 and not Y1? They're almost the same except for a few words in the bottom.
Y1 will not be offered?
Y1 will not be offered.
Thank you. It's been moved and objected to. Discussion on the amendment.
I only have Y1. Is there another copy of Y2 floating around somewhere?
Okay. Here's one.
Mr. Chairman, we did talk about this amendment, and we're a little torn on it and decided to let the committee decide what they thought about it. There's two schools of thought there, and Representative Seaton had one of the schools of thought that cheap labor discussion. Second school of thought is there, particularly on set net sites, people who have family coming up, friends, and the cheaper license allows them to work. True. We just pretty much we're easy on this one, whatever the resources committee thinks.
Okay. Love those comments. Okay. Is there any other discussion on amendment number one?
Didn't need that one.
What's that? The only problem would be is if you wanted to give a person a fish. Realize is that you're going to give them fish, you're going to give them fish anyway, so you don't want. I will remove my objection to Amendment 1. Is there any other objection to Amendment 1? Representative Ledoux?
I guess I want to hear, I mean, I've heard what the sponsor has said now with respect to the 1 versus the 7 day. What's the sponsor's view of Amendment number 1?
Well, we wouldn't have put the amendment in ourselves. My Representative Moses wasn't going to make that switch himself. We think a little bit differently about it than Representative Seaton, although I see his point of view. We don't think that commercial fishermen are out looking for cheap labor, and actually, unless you've got just a 1 week period or you're looking to fish, most of the fishermen that we've been talking to have regular crew. They're there for, they're paying the $60 or $180. They're the people that those fishermen trust to work for them. I don't think that many people would be looking to get cheap labor and put their operation at risk and catch less fish, but it is a, I mean, it's a valid point, and that's why we decided to leave it to your committee to discuss.
Okay. Is there any objection to Amendment 1? Hearing none, Amendment 1 carries. Any further amendments? No? No other testimony?
I'd just like to, you know, I didn't prepare an amendment on it. We do have the question of fishermen's fund. I think that we get away from a lot of the problems that we had with that, because if you are having somebody come out as a tourist, you're not going to be relying on them for your crew members. You're not going to have them at the roller pulling fish. You're not going to have them doing dangerous jobs if they're paying you to go observe, and you can't count on what kind of person that's going to be. So I think that we get away from some of the problems that we would have had with this bill of Fisherman's Fund. So I'm not going to offer the amendment to remove the Fisherman's Fund section, but I just thought we should discuss it so that it had an airing, and that's why we, I don't think we need to remove Fisherman's Fund from applicability at the end of this life.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the bill? What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
President Kath?
I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill 26 out with attached recommendations, with individual recommendations that attached to
this bill. Any motion made? Is there an objection?
I object. Representative Kath, did you mean the CS as amended?
Thank you. CS as amended for House Bill 26 with individual recommendations.
Version
Y.
Is there any objection now on the revised motion? Hearing none, the CS for HB 26 as amended passes out of committee. There's no other business. Return for that.
Way to go, man.